Hello, everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavallari.
And that's the first time I've gotten to do that in like a month and a half without a little kid laughing behind me.
It is kind of cute when he is like...
Can't hold it in.
Just can't hold it in, yeah.
Yeah, he thinks it's really silly when Daddy does his radio voice. So. Of course. And it probably is, I mean, it actually, is, yeah. When you think about it. It's what a weird affectation we use when we do radio.
I mean, I think I laughed the first time you did it, too, mm-hmm. So it's fine.
Yeah. I actually did radio in high school, so that's, you know, where you learn it, in the radio class, on the radio.
I didn't realize you had such an extensive background in broadcasting.
Yep. So we are doing an episode today that is like 2 years in the making.
culmination.
We've been threatening to do this episode for 2 years. Today we are going to be talking about Twilight Imperium 4th Edition Prophecy of Kings. Prophecy of Kings is the big box expansion for Twilight Imperium 4th Edition that was released in 2020 during the COVID year. And Jason and I both got copies relatively early on, yeah. And only had chances to play it on Tabletop Simulator for the first 2 years. However, at the very end of Gen Con a couple of weeks ago, we did finally play an in-person game of Twilight Imperium with the Prophecy of Kings expansion. So now I think if you count the digital games we've played on Tabletop Simulator, we've played four times, I think, with Prophecy of Kings. Yes, at least. We had two back-to-back games, well, back-to-back in one weekend, I guess, during 2020 Gen Con, yeah. And then we played again not that long ago to kind of refresh our memory about all of these rules. And I think there might have even been another weekend in there where you and Gabe and I played because our D&D group wasn't meeting one weekend in, like, maybe. 2021. So we've maybe actually played Prophecy of Kings, like, five times.
Yeah.
But we definitely had like one big five-player game at the end of Gen Con. So I feel like we had been waiting until we had done that, and we'd been waiting until we just kind of felt comfortable enough to see how we feel about the expansion, what it adds, if there's any sort of like wrinkles that it adds that maybe aren't good, and just kind of the overall state of Twilight Imperium in 2020. State of the Imperium, I guess you could say, right?
That was well done.
Yeah, because the game has been out for, like, the base game has been out now for 5 years, which seems, like, crazy to me because, like, you know, I had bought Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition and then immediately, a year later, was disappointed that they, you know, like, undermined my usefulness of having that edition by bringing out 4th Edition. And that felt recent. That feels like a recent wound still, you know? But
it hurts.
Yeah, but it's been out for 5 years, Jason. We've been playing this game for 5 years, and we've been playing with the expansion for 2 years now. So let's get into it. What does Prophecy of Kings add? What does it change with Twilight Imperium 4th Edition? You want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. I can take a stab at it.
I'll jump in if you need.
I'll probably forget some things.
Sure, yeah. We'll tag team.
I mean, as far as I know, that it doesn't actually change a lot, any of the rules.
Not at a fundamental level, no. It changes the balance of the game, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But that's not a rule change.
I mean, it adds a whole bunch of stuff.
Yes.
So, like, now they've added, on top of all the other units that you have, now you have these mech units, which are sort of, like, beefed up infantry.
Yes.
And they added these, like commanders or agents or whatever they're called.
Hero agents and
commanders.
And commander, which are essentially just, like, extra abilities, one of which you get at the beginning of the game and then two of which you unlock.
Yeah, so, and they like, add... Like Kyle said, like new abilities to your faction or something like that.
Yeah, thematically, they're supposed to be like high ranking people in your faction that have special abilities and everything. But really, if they just kind of new abilities.
And the biggest thing that it adds is several new player races.
Seven, yeah, I believe.
Yeah, seven.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, so it adds a ton of new races for people that were tired of the, 26 that were in the original one?
It was 17.
Oh, 17.
Yeah.
Okay,
We're at 25, technically, if you count the new one that just came out with what do they call it?
Oh, the Codex or whatever?
Yeah, the Codex. Codex 3 had a new, like, faction in it, but we haven't printed that off or played with it or anything. So we'll just talk about the new seven. I don't even have enough to say about all seven, right? I mean, I've played like some of them once, but
yeah.
I think we can talk about the new seven as a whole. It also adds a bunch of new objectives, both public objectives and secret objectives, which are the things that you try to complete in order to get points in Twilight Imperium. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of new tech as well. And then it adds a few other things. It adds like exploration elements.
Oh yeah, the exploration elements. I forgot about those. And the legendary planets.
Right, yeah, legendary planets are kind of cool. But yeah, so the exploration elements, basically anytime somebody claims a planet for the first time, they get to take a card from a deck that matches the type of that planet, and then there'll be some sort of reward, and that represents the exploration. And then there's also a bunch of tokens that go into deep space locations that don't have planets. And if you have a certain type of tech, then that allows you to explore those spaces, and they have their own special deck that gives you special bonuses, potentially little fragments that are wild fragments that can become these combined with other fragments that then get you a card out of the like artifact deck or whatever it is that gives you extra special good things.
Yeah. I have not once, by the way, completed an artifact.
I have. I was doing it in, you know, when we were playing one of those online games, I was playing the new race that they start out with the technology that allows them to explore the deep space areas, and I just did that the whole game.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a super successful game, but I sure got a lot of those things, which was cool. But that's basically it. I said new tech, it adds two new colors, so you can basically play up to 8 players now instead of being capped at 6. So it's got all that, and I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that was really huge. To me, like, the main draw to this expansion was probably new races, new objectives, new tech, because those are kind of the things. I mean, tech and races are probably the two most interesting, exciting things to look at in the base game, and then having more of that seemed very, very exciting. But what I didn't realize was how exciting the objectives were going to be, because they change up the dynamic of the game so much. Because in the base game of Twilight Imperium, some races had these, like, insane baked in advantages because there were only so many objectives. And so when the tech objectives come up, Jolnar, who always has an advantage on tech, was assuredly going to score some points there. And it's one of the reasons why they had such high win rates in the original game.
Mm-hmm.
And like similar with like something like Hakan, right? When the economic goals come up, Hakan easily gets those, along with, you know, several other races and everything. But now there's a wider variance in the sorts of objectives that exist in the game. And I feel like that was needed in order to kind of smooth the game out and make it like a little less static, the way that it always kind of goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that. Then let's talk about, I don't know, you haven't jumped in yet, so I don't even know if you've thought about the objectives or not and how that's changed the game.
Actually, I haven't really, because I probably couldn't even tell you which ones were new and which ones weren't.
Oh,
because my focus has largely been on sort of the, I guess, less the more dynamic aspects of the game rather than the objectives.
You just like exploring the new races and techs and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, in any game that has like multiple factions or multiple races, like I want to play them all. And so I'm always, you know, really excited when we have a whole ream of new ones to try out.
The new toys.
Yeah, exactly. Like I do it with video games and I do it with board games. So
So what do you think of those things, Jason? What do you think of, let's start with races. How do you feel about the new races?
Well, I've only played two of them so far.
That we can remember, because we've had several games where I think we were like, let's play the new races. And then like later on, months later, we're like, wait, did we play these people yet or not? Did I play these people? This feels vaguely familiar.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. And to be honest, I can't even remember the first one that I played. Yeah. I don't remember which one it was. The second one that I played, I've played multiple times because I actually really liked them, mm-hmm. Which was the Volwraith Cabal.
Yeah.
They're basically like space dinosaurs.
They remind me of, the Horde or what are the like little Horde guys from StarCraft? What
are those, Horde.
Jason? Is it, they're just called the Horde?
Who? Orcs?
No. they look like Tyranids from Warhammer 40K.
Oh.
Is that the Horde?
No, you might be thinking of Draenei.
No, not from World of Warcraft, from StarCraft.
Oh, from StarCraft. Oh, the Protoss.
Protoss
are... Nope. Oh, the Zerg.
Zerg!
Yes, okay.
The Zerg,
we finally got there.
The Zerg, yeah. The Zerg look a whole lot like like those guys, so...
Yeah, and they kind of operate like that, too. Like, you know how the Zerg's whole thing is to, like, I don't know, consume and incorporate? So the Volwraith Cabal kind of does that. So whenever they, like, destroy an opponent's unit, they actually capture that unit, and later on, they can basically use that as an extra kind of resource. Basically, they can give it back to the person that they stole it from and just create one of those units of their own for free. They can also do it with certain tech things, too. So they can, like, if there's a tech upgrade for, like, one of their units that they don't have yet, all they have to do is basically, again, capture one of those types of units. And then when they research technology the next time, they just give it back to the person and they can ignore all the tech requirements for acquiring the upgrade of that unit. It's pretty cool.
The races, they seem a little bit more complex, I think,
compared to
the previous races, the way that they function and work and everything. Like it seems like they all have sort of like a rhythm to them in terms of like the order that you operate their different special abilities in order to make it all like to get like the reward at the end of the puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the base game races kind of felt like they all just had like a spattering of different strengths and weaknesses, and none of them really had to be used in unison in order to make the race sing or anything like that, or the faction sing. But it kind of feels like with these newer factions, they're designed for you to use them in some sort of like more complicated way to make them really, really work.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I think I continuously chose the Cabal because there seemed like one of the more straightforward ones.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to win this game. I don't want to spend the whole game trying to figure out how this faction works.
Yeah, the last one that I played, it was the Titans of Wool, and I mean, they definitely had one of those sorts of things going on where it's like, I've got these tokens, and when I do a certain thing, I get to put a token on a planet, and then when I do a different certain thing, I get to turn that token into a PDS unit, or I can, you know, do this other thing that then turns it into a mech or whatever. And so it was like just this sort of like progression of using your abilities in a certain order in order to achieve certain goals.
Yeah.
And it feels like, I don't know, like it feels like a lot of them are just on the whole more complicated or more complex than a lot of the base game races where it's just like, hey, you get all the tech.
Right.
Hey,
yeah.
You got all the money. You get a right, war, yeah, son.
Yeah. You're the money faction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 And there's a part of me that sort of like just kind of misses the simplicity of those old factions. There's enough going on in Twilight Imperium that I almost felt like, I don't know, like burdened by the complexity of the newer races, the newer factions when I play them.
Yeah.
It's fun and it's interesting, but I feel like the sort of like mental bandwidth that I have is like then struggling to also be thinking three steps ahead about what goals and how I'm going to achieve those goals I want to be working on, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
In addition to like, you know, trying to most efficiently min-max the specific faction abilities that are right in front of me and everything.
Yeah.
So I think that the last few times we've played the game, I've really tried to engage with those new factions as much as I can, and I've come away from it just kind of being like, I'd really just like to go back to Sol. You know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, part of me misses my Nalu collective.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really missing like several of the factions that we used to play more, you know, like eagerly. And I feel like, I don't know, having the faction almost makes me feel like I'm like cheating myself if I don't play all the new factions first before going back to the factions that I actually like, you know?
Yeah.
But like, you know, Asarl, like I really like them, you know, and I'd really like to play them some more. But you know, and anyway, so I feel like with the factions, it's interesting. I think it's cool that they're there. It would be ridiculous if they weren't, but I actually think that I prefer the older factions that I've played to any of the newer ones that I've played.
I would say that the one that I've been playing, is probably like one of my favorite ones so far.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
What about everything else? How do you feel about the exploration stuff?
It's fine. I mean, I've never gotten anything like incredibly useful out of it. So yeah. It's sort of like, all right, like this could be a thing, but I don't really want to waste the resources to do more of this.
There is some really wildly useful stuff in there and a lot of like wildly not useful stuff as well. So like it feels like
right,
there's some wild swings in terms of like how certain people at the table are benefiting from them and other people just aren't.
Well, so each time that I've done it, I usually end up with like, I don't know, maybe three or four artifact fragments.
Yeah.
That don't match. So I can't make an actual artifact and they're just sort of like dead cards sitting on my play area.
Well, there were several times where like, the thing that came up was a condition, like it was conditional whether or not you got a thing or not. And I think like the first two or three planets that I explored in our last game just amounted to literally nothing for me, you know?
One of the ones I had last game made that planet that I was exploring like have an extra influence or something.
Mm-hmm. And those are useful, you know? Yeah. But, like, you know, other people were getting, like, +2 to production, and that's even better.
I know, yeah. They vary very wildly.
They do, yeah. There's some wild swings in there. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know how I feel about it. I almost still prefer playing without it, because, like, it just, I don't know, like, that evens the game out in a little bit of a fairer way, whereas, like, it feels like unfair luck just kind of popping up all over the table with the way that it's played out the times that we've used it. And, I mean, the catch with all of this expansion content is that you can't pick and choose what you want to use, because so much of it interacts with other parts of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all of the new, or many, at least, of the new races have mechanics baked in that are specific to these new mechanics and these new components that came with Prophecy of Kings. So you can't just say, I want to play this new race, but I don't want to use exploration, because they might be a race that relies on exploration to an extent.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Or something else. And so, like, you can't, so, the new tech, right? Like, you can't, some of them, like, you know, like, maybe start with the new tech that's in the game that they added. And so you can't just say, oh, I just want to use the new races, but not the new tech. Like, there's a lot of new components, new mechanics and stuff that are dependent upon the other new stuff. And so it's not modular in the way that some, like, you know, like in the distant past, a lot of Fantasy Flight expansions were. That's how I know all the Battlestar expansions were, like, you just add in whatever you wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the case here. Like, if you're going to play Prophecy of Kings, you're playing with all of it or none of it.
Right.
And so that's, you know, that's something to know about if you are curious about this expansion still in 2022. So, I don't know. Like, there's this little part of me that would love to go back and just play vanilla a little bit. Or maybe with, like, the first codex or two codexes or whatever worth of stuff, because that added a lot of, like, new action cards and stuff that were interesting without overwhelming you with, like, new things. But at the same time, like, I think that it's still fun, you know, like, if you happen to be the one that does get lucky with some exploration stuff to you know, like, kind of, like, you know, hit the jackpot. It's fun, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not fun to be on the end of somebody that's getting absolutely nothing, you know, and just kind of, like, trailing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, it does a lot to shake the game up. So if you've played the base game a lot and it started to get kind of stale for you, then this is, I think, probably a good value to try to shake things up and give it, you know, a new fresh coat of paint. But if you haven't played the base game to death, I don't know that you need this.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Like, it adds new stuff for people that, like you said, would be sort of bored with the original one. Which for me anyway would take a long time because there's a lot to explore. Yeah.
Yeah.
And anything, like, it's not just the new factions, or the exploration thing. It's like the mechs, like you can do without them.
They're neat.
They are neat, but, like,
they all have special abilities. Like, they're asymmetrical from the other, you know, it's one of the only units in the game that, and, like, flagships that are actually like just asymmetrical between all the different factions, which is neat.
I don't actually feel like they did anything significant.
It's not huge, but I mean, like, they're still neat. They're a neat thing to have. I like the mechs, actually.
The agents or whatever, like, their powers, I think, frankly, some of their powers are quite unbalanced.
Yeah, and also it's three more new things to have to remember to use.
Right. I frequently, you know, like, forgot to use mine.
Yeah, like during all the different, you know, conditional situations where you would trigger a power or, you know, like, unlock a power or whatever. It's just one more thing to be taking up all that bandwidth that, you know,
yeah,
like, I feel like I had enough bandwidth to handle the base game and feel really smart at the end of the day, and I feel like this one is making me feel not as smart.
In some cases, I can see what they were trying to do. So, like, for example, this last game that you played, I managed to take control of a legendary planet, which had a pretty great ability, actually.
Yeah.
So the legendary planets come with some kind of special ability.
They're really neat.
Yeah, they are. They're really neat. Mine, I think, allowed me to, like, put infantry on planets and stuff. So it was cool, and frankly, also, I think, a little unbalanced. But I think what they were trying to do was to provide another, like, point where conflict could like, ooh, I want that planet for that ability. And it just didn't happen.
Well, because, I mean, you still have to play to the points, right?
And right, exactly.
You're playing to the objectives. And the I don't know if there's any objectives in there or not for those legendary planets, but they're very useful things to have, just like, you know, some of the best systems are in the game. But if it's going to cost you more than you're going to gain to go after that and,
right,
you know, maybe put a target on your back or start a war with somebody that's going to be really vindictive and hold a grudge, it's just not worth it if, you know, you've got this other stuff to work towards that's going to get you actual points to stay competitive in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, you, like, sure, like, if you really want that planet, you can go after it, but you're probably sacrificing working towards some other thing that's going to make you win.
Yep. Okay. Do we have anything else that we need to cover about Prophecy of Kings?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't really know a ton about aside from the stuff that we played.
And we've both already kind of said that we feel like Prophecy of Kings is probably a good purchase for somebody that has played the base game absolutely to death.
Oh, yeah.
And would just like some new stuff in order to spice the game up and, you know, make it feel a little bit fresh and have some more stuff to explore and everything.
I mean, personally, I think it's worth it for having more options for races. So
I mean, I'm a huge fan of the base game. I guess this is the other thing, right? If you love the base game, even if you don't get a chance to play it all the time, but you love the base game, right? Like, you probably already own this. And if you don't, I'd say just go ahead and get it, because any amount of Twilight Imperium is enough to make you feel happy when you absolutely love the thing, right? And you're going to want to try it out at some point and everything. But I mean, like, if it's a game that you have like sort of a more casual experience with, more of a like casual relationship with, then in that case I don't think it's necessary if you haven't played the base game to death and you're just looking for something to kind of change it up. Or, you know, like, I guess this kind of goes hand in hand, because I mean, if you played it to death and you probably know exactly where the objectives are that, you know, you're going to want to complete, or that are the most easily completed by certain races or certain factions, you know, and everything. I feel like that's one of the other things that it does is just kind of like change the objectives up to the point where it's not the same game every single time anymore. If you had gotten into a rhythm of all your games feel the same because everybody knows how to go for the, you know, the objectives that they can complete and everything.
Right. But, yeah.
Anyway, so I guess State of Twilight Imperium 4th Edition in 2022. How do you feel about it now, Jason? I mean, we've been on record as saying it's one of our favorite games, especially me, right? I've, you know, talked it up as my favorite game in the last few years and everything. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about it just in general now? Twilight Imperium, not necessarily Prophecy of Kings, but Twilight Imperium in general.
It's still a really fun game. I mean, I wish I could win once in a while, but aside from that, like, I'll still play it whenever there's an opportunity.
Yeah. I would love to play more. It's one of these games where every time I'm not playing it, I'm like, I can't wait till the next time that I can play Twilight Imperium. So I still absolutely love the game. I think that the last time we played, like, I was like, I'm ready for this game to be over, you know, like about an hour from when it actually ended. Now, it's hard to divorce the the actual environmental situation of the day, because like my 2-year-old had closed the air conditioner vents and we didn't realize it. And so it was like sweltering hot in my house. And I was like, oh, no, the AC's broken. It turned out it wasn't. But, you know, like, it was just like I couldn't wait to be anywhere else but right there while we were playing the game. And so it's hard for me to divorce, like, you know, just the way that I was feeling because it felt so crappy in the house to, you know, from like, you know, whether or not that's why I was like not having the most fun that I've ever had with the game or whatever. But I feel like if we started this game at like 8 a.m., you know, when I'm like at my freshest in like a nice cool basement and like nobody was in a rush, nobody's checking their watch because they've got someplace to be in the afternoon or anything like that, I feel like this is still like ideally like my favorite way to spend a day with a board game.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's a lot of asks.
Right. Yeah. Who's got the time?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've never started a game of this any earlier than 10 a.m. And, you know, I'm a morning person, so I would like love to just start it at like, you know, even earlier than that. But,
yeah, that's not happening, buddy.
I know. But man, I would love that. I would love that so much. anyway, so aside from Twilight Imperium and Twilight Imperium Prophecy of Kings, we also brought up the fact that I purchased a copy of Twilight Inscription, the Twilight Imperium-themed roll and write at Gen Con. We played, I think, more than half of a game, actually, when we played at Gen Con. We were, like, on round, like, 13 or 14 or 15 or something like that when we said, oh, it's getting too late, we've got to wrap it up. So we saw most of it, Jason. You basically saw everything that the game does, because all it does beyond there, it just kind of like continues to alternate in the different phases between those strategy rounds where you have a certain number of resources to allocate between your four boards. An occasional war where you then are comparing your scores for your fleets on either side of your war board, your warfare board with your two neighbors. And then there's, you know, like the typical rounds, like around, I think, every or a card every round that allows you to get some of those resources. And then, like, there's three voting phases throughout the entire game, basically, like sort of like an agenda phase out of the, you know, from a normal Twilight Imperium game, where everybody uses the votes that they've acquired through the use of their different resources on their boards to try to vote for one of three different agendas or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then at the very end, it's like you have one final war, and then, like, everybody tallies up their points, and whoever has the most wins, basically. So I've played two complete games solo against the solo bot that they put in the game. You can't lose to the bot. The bot is just there to run interference with you to, like, try to complete the objectives that get put out before you can reach them, essentially, to damage your score, right? To try to reduce your score so that you've got to try to compete with the bot and what it's getting from the resources in order to try to reach the objectives before it does so that your score is, you know, like, maximized, basically.
Yeah.
And then you're basically playing for a high score, and then they've got, you know, like, one of those little charts that a lot of, like, high-scoring solo games have to say, like, you're the king of the universe or whatever, or you're space trash, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever their labels are for it. And that's the solo game. Like, the bot has, like, six different tracks, and, like, whenever you roll those six dice that give you the resources that you allocate on your roll and write boards, it basically is just, oh my god, my microphone is listing. So that basically just tells the bot where they go, and then that will, like, determine how quickly it achieves some of the objectives that are out in front of you on the board and everything. Like, it can get to Mechatol before you, and it can get, like, you know, the higher level of Mechatol points. It can get the four objectives out in front of you, and then, I don't know, there's, like, one or two other things that it can do before you. So I've played that, and I think I have, a little bit more formulated opinion on whether or not it's more Roll'n'Write or more Twilight Imperium. It does feel a whole lot like some of the Roll'n'Writes that I've played. I'm thinking specifically of It's That's So Clever. I have the physical game of That's So Clever, and I've played a ton of it on an app as well. It's a pretty good app. And it's like that, but, like, times five or whatever, right? Like, yeah. It's magnified. So there's just so many more choices, so many more places to put the resources that you're getting from the dice in order to try to unlock new rewards and stuff. I like it. It's fun. It feels maybe a little too big and a little too long for a solo Roll'n'Write. So, I mean, if you're looking at it in terms of, like, I like solo Roll'n'Writes, I'm looking for, you know, maybe one that's a little bit beefier or whatever than the 20-minute Roll'n'Writes that I usually play. You know, this runs over an hour. At least this has so far for me, maybe right around an hour running it solo. So just kind of be aware of that if that's something that you're considering. I think that playing with other people would maybe be interesting, but I'm not sure I want to play with a huge group because it feels like a lot to have to explain with all the symbology and everything.
Right, yeah.
Maybe if the people are, like, you know, like, really, really quick at picking up games, or, you know, they're already familiar with it or something, I could go with, like, a crowd of seven or whatever. But otherwise, I'd say probably keep it to, like, three or four or something. But, I mean, like, the Twilight Imperium DNA is there, and you kind of see how, you know, like, there's one resource that's basically, like, technology, and that helps you unlock certain, like, tech skip type things that get, you know, applied for technologies on each one of the different four different boards to give you, like, different, you know, like, sort of shortcuts and bonuses and stuff. But ultimately, when you really boil it all down, it's still a Roll'n'Write at heart. It's not exactly Twilight Imperium. It just has a few of those things in there. So you're still going to have, like, you know, an agenda phase every now and then, but only three times, where you have to try to, like, you know, have a little bit of a conversation at the table about who's going to benefit from this, who's not, you know, who's just going to hurt the most, the sorts of conversations that you already have in a regular game of Twilight Imperium during an agenda phase. You have that, you know, you're going to have that in a game of Twilight Inscription, and that's very Twilight Imperium. That's cool. But, like, when it comes to warfare, you're just comparing two numbers that, like, they just denote, like, how many little dots you put on a grid, right? Like, it doesn't feel anything like the combat does in an actual game of Twilight Imperium. So, you know, like, the Dreadnought isn't nearly as, like, threatening and like, you know, like, impressive out on the board, or like a fleet of three Dreadnoughts or whatever, as it is when you're playing the real board game Twilight Imperium, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that part kind of suffers from being a Roll'n'Write. I think that the agenda, the voting stuff, kind of works all right. You know, having a good economy can make all your other stuff work really, really well. So the economic part of it works pretty well with, like, trade goods and stuff. They did a pretty good job of integrating that mechanic into it thematically. And, you know, like, the exploration stuff is fun for a Roll'n'Write. You know, you're basically just using, you know, one of or two of the resources to, you know, spread your wings out to different areas that then you can use one of the other resources to claim a bunch of planets or whatever. But ultimately, I mean, I don't think that it's going to scratch all the itches that you might get from needing a game of Twilight Imperium. It's just a pretty good Roll'n'Write with, you know, some pretty decent Twilight Inscription theming going on. So
yeah.
I still think it's a successful game. I think it's a fun game. I think it's a really cool game. It's a really cool one of those, like a roll and write. But it's not going to like be an alternative to Twilight Imperium if that's what you're hoping for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. I'm tired of holding this microphone up.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, I might. I might literally drop the mic today. Jason, did you have any comments about Twilight Inscription? I just talked for a long time about it. You have played it.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean, I really feel like I can't say anything really substantive about it because we didn't get through a whole game. And the one that we were playing, it was more kind of like I couldn't think about strategy or something because I was like, I needed to think about how... Okay, you do this thing over here, and then that happens to this thing, and like then you write this little thing and circle that, but then you use this and cross it out over here. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on, and I was more focused on how do you play the game as opposed to whether or not is this game fun.
Right, yeah. I mean, we were totally focusing on just learning the mechanics
right,
and everything
yeah.
that day. Yeah. Okay, well, good enough. I say that as I struggle with this mic. I tried to fix it, but it's still falling. I think I need a new mic arm.
It's like the LPT tagline. Good enough.
It's a podcast disaster. I'm just holding it up now. I'm Bob Barker with a really giant microphone instead of a tiny one.
All right, roll us out, man.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you have any comments about who the best Twilight Imperium race is or like what the best objective is, ooh, that'd be really spicy. How would they let us know, Jason?
All right, well, to let us know that you really like the one where you have to spend 8 resources, you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website, limitedplaytime.com. You can go to Twitter, which is @limitedplaytime, or Instagram @limitedplaytimepodcast.
Thank you. If you guys would like to see more Limited Playtime, we have a 4-minute video kind of showing a little summary, a little 4-minute clip show of our time at Gen Con. That's up on our YouTube channel. I'll just search for Limited Playtime on YouTube. We plan on doing some more video content. I don't think we can promise when, but we definitely have a couple things in mind. So hopefully that'll start popping up in the next few weeks. And we will be back in about 3 weeks with another audio episode for your favorite podcast service. So thanks for listening, everybody. And we will see you in just about 3 weeks.
Later.
Bye.